The Off the Ball Podcast Network. The Rugby World Cup on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Sexton from outside the 10-meter line. It's spinning.
It looks good.
Le drop de Jonathan Sexton.
Rugby World Cup on Off the Ball. Updates, analysis, and opinion across all OTB channels from start to finish. This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio.
Now, good afternoon. You're very welcome along this Tuesday afternoon for our third episode of the Off the Ball Rugby World Cup show. We're into week two, game week two for Ireland, getting ready for Japan this Saturday, following on from the 27-3 win against Scotland on Sunday morning. Coming up over the next 30 or 40 minutes, we'll be live over to Japan to get the latest from Owen Sheehan. He was at Ireland's press conference this morning. Plenty of news coming out of that. We'll also hear from Paul Williams of Rugby World Magazine and the Under the Sticks podcast. We'll be talking a bit about Wales' opening game yesterday, a good win against Georgia for them, and a few more topics as well. As usual, we're streaming live on offtheball.com, the Go Loud app, and across all of our social channels, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter as well. If you want to get in touch, leave us a comment. What do you want to hear from us talking about this afternoon or across the rest of our Rugby World Cup shows on Off the Ball? You can tweet us at TodayFM, and all our rugby coverage here on Off the Ball is brought to you by Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Now, this Tuesday morning, there is one game going on in Ireland's Pool A at the moment. There's 37 minutes gone at the moment so far between Russia and Samoa. And so far, Russia, like they did against Japan the last time out, they have started that game quite well. They lead 6-5 after 36 minutes. Two penalties for Yuri Kushnarev, cancelling out Alapati Leua's try for Samoa on 16 minutes. But a controversial moment already. Samoa are just back to 14 players at the moment. They were briefly down to 13 because they've had two yellow cards so far. First of all for centre Ray Lee Lowe, and also in the last 10 minutes or so for Moti Matua, who is probably quite lucky to only be off for 10 minutes. He put in a very dangerous tackle on Russian fullback Vasily Artemev, which saw him sin-binned. It was the kind of contact, shoulder to the head. Artemev, it must be said, ducked into the tackle ever so slightly. But on another day, it definitely could have been a red card, and something maybe the sighting commissioner is going to be looking out for. And very interestingly, this coming on the morning when World Rugby came out and said that they were not happy so far with some of the decisions that have been made. As they say, it wasn't up to their standards. The one that jumps out being Reece Hodges' high tackle in the Australia-Fiji game, which has seen him be cited. We might talk a little bit about that to Paul Williams later on as well. But plenty of news this afternoon as well. We will start with, I suppose, a health check on the Irish team. Johnny Sexton didn't train with the Irish rugby squad today ahead of Saturday's World Cup Pool A game against Japan. He suffered a leg injury in Sunday's opening win against Scotland. Management are hopeful, though, that Sexton will resume training on Thursday. Joey Carberry, Keith Earls and Rob Kearney all trained fully, as did Peter Romani and Bundy Aki. They passed the third stage of their head injury assessment. So back on the pitch this afternoon. Good signs, but who knows, maybe they just won't be risked this coming Saturday against Japan. Robbie Henshaw trained away from the rest of the squad. He's still recovering from his hamstring injury at the moment. And we're going to play you a couple of videos from that press conference. First of all, one player who could be looking to force his way into the team this weekend, Dave Kilcoyne. In the last year or so, he moved past Jack McGrann, the pecking order, certainly in the form of his life right now, and with Joe Schmidt maybe putting half an eye on changes for this weekend, he could, you know, jump ahead of Cian Healy for this weekend in the squad rotation system. Cian Healy, interestingly, the other day actually pointing out that he's feeling a bit of pressure now from Dave Kilcoyne, who's certainly in the form of his life. But here's Dave Kilcoyne this morning in Japan talking about what the hosts are going to have this coming Saturday.
We were very impressed with the performance against Russia. We've actually toured there 2 years ago and we played against them, so we know exactly the threats they have. I thought they were phenomenal against Russia. You know, you look at some of their finishers, Lemecki, Matsushima on the wing, you know, Shatahore, Tukarev, Michael Leach. You know, he's captained I think the Waratahs before, and he's over here now doing an incredible job for Japan. So they've threats right across the park. They play a very quick game, so we're going to have to deal with that tempo. They probably don't kick as much as many teams. We're expecting very hot weather, so it's going to be tough for us. So we know what we've cut out for us.
Yeah, that's Dave Kilcoyne there speaking about the possible threats Japan have this weekend. A great form at the moment, it has to be said. He is in, came on early in the second half on Sunday and put in another great showing in the scrum as well as in the loose as well. He's carrying really, I think, coming off the bench. He has that that Sean Cronin impact when he comes off the bench in those games. Just such a powerful runner, puts in really strong tackles. And another man who did come off the bench early enough, it has to be said, the last day, and is probably well placed for a shot in the starting 15 if Ireland don't want to risk Bundiaki this weekend, is Chris Farrell. Here he is talking about the centre options that Ireland have.
Look, I think, you know, I've said this many times over the last couple of years that I've been involved in the system. You know, I think despite, you know, centre being quite a competitive area and we've had a lot of injuries there, whether it be short term or long term, but no matter who's, you know, no matter what combination goes in, we seem to, you know, connect pretty well, and I feel the same with Bundy, or whether that be in training with Robbie or, and across the board, the other boys are the same. You know, I feel like no matter what combination is used, we all, you know, we all know each other's roles so well that we feed off each other, and, you know, we're very comfortable with no matter who's there.
You knew you became a 12 before you got the honour.
Who's in all 13? You know, in Ulster I was at 12, and until I went to France and I played a bit more at 13, and played a little at 12, but I've been over there as well. But I think, you know, I've said this as well, but it's as a 12 or 13, you've got to know each role, and you've got to understand what the 12 wants from you for you to be an effective 13, and likewise, the 12's got to understand what the 13 wants from the 12 to do his role to the best of their ability. So it's really seamless, you know, transfer no matter whether you're going from 13 to 12 or 12 to 13. I feel like in this group, you've got to do that.
Yeah, Chris Farrell there, one of the, I suppose, 50-50 calls Joe Schmidt had to make before the World Cup, him over Will Addison to make it into the 31-man squad. And based on Sunday's showing against Scotland, Chris Farrell certainly isn't leaving any questions to be answered there so far. Brilliant performance in attack and defence. Defensively in particularly, though, just getting right up into the face of Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg any time they got the ball, putting them under enormous pressure. Just to go back on that injury update, we can hear now from Irish skills coach Richie Murphy, who was speaking before the media today.
Yeah, Pete and Bundy have come through well. Obviously, we've moved base, and we've moved into Kagawa, which has been incredible. The lads have settled in well. Rest and recuperation has probably been the main focus over the last sort of 48 hours since the game. So guys are feeling good. Bundy and Pete have both passed HIA 3, which means they're fit to return to training, which they've done today. And all the other guys that we talked about earlier on last week, and you got an update on yesterday, all participated in training today.
Including Robbie
Hancock. Robbie, he was in training today. Yeah, he's in his sort of return to play. So he done a lot of running today. Came through that no problem, and we're going to keep an eye on him this week, or sort of today, tomorrow, to see what he's like on Thursday, and make a decision on him then. Johnny also just went through sort of rehab today, done some work with the team, but he's been sort of monitored. We'll see again. We'd expect him to train fully on Thursday, and that wouldn't be unusual for him not to train sort of 2 days before, 2 days after a test match.
Sure.
Yeah, no, Joey's fine. Earlsey fully trained today. Rob Carney fully trained. So those three guys from last week have made really good progress, and even by the end of last week they were ready to play, but we didn't feel it was the right thing to put them in, with the fact that we had other players in the 31-man squad that we were happy with and we knew could do a job for us. Well, the first thing is, obviously, we have a lot of respect for Japan. They're a very, very good side, and they've proven that over the last couple of years. So the team that we pick at the weekend will be the team that we believe is the right team to go out and play a test match after 6 days. There could be some rotation in it, but it'll be a very strong team. We're purely focused on beating Japan. Today was all about Japan, and obviously Thursday will be as well.
Yeah, Ireland skills coach Richie Murphy there giving us the latest on the Irish injury updates and the health status of the squad. Owen Sheehan live in Japan at the moment. How are you, Owen?
I'm very well, Neil. Welcome to Hamamatsu. How are things?
Oh, that is a backdrop, Owen.
It certainly is. It's nice. It's pretty much the only bit of skyline we have. That and the other tall building over there, which is actually the hotel that myself and the Japanese team are staying in. There's not too many high rises around here, but this is the biggest built up area in the entire state, really, to be honest, Hamamatsu. This is Shizuoka, the state of Shizuoka, the prefecture of Shizuoka, I should say, to use a Japanese term. And this is where Ireland will be playing. I mean that in the sense of the state. They are not in this town. They're staying a little bit up the road. And that town where we were yesterday was called, or this morning, I should say, was called Iwata. And to be honest with you, I was considering staying there before booking Hamamatsu. And after visiting, I'm very happy that I went with the decision that I did go, because there is nothing in Iwata except for the training ground that Ireland are training in.
It seems to be that's the kind of pattern Ireland have followed, because they were in Chiba last week, which by all accounts isn't, it's not Tokyo essentially. There wasn't really much going on, which is probably exactly what you want from a coaching point of view, I'd say, at a World Cup, these kind of quiet little places.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's probably... Well, I think that's definitely why they went for Chiba instead of going for Tokyo City Centre. Like, Scotland went for Tokyo City Centre in comparison. Yokohama they went for as well, though, which couldn't really be avoided, I guess, and that's nice and built up, so I don't think it's a hard and fast rule. But I think down here in Shizuoka, to be fair, there isn't exactly a whole choice of urban areas in which you're going to get distracted. I think they're actually staying closer to the stadium on Saturday, and it's a bit closer as well to the training ground, so it's just purely logistical. The next couple of cities then, when we move on to Kobe and Fukuoka, they're staying more near the city centre as well. So you're right, Chiba was definitely a distraction-free zone for the Ireland team, but it's not exactly the rule that they're going for. They're not going to be staying outside of town for the whole tournament.
So you were at the press conference this morning, well, this morning our time, this afternoon your time over in Japan. Johnny Sexton's news is the news that stands out, I suppose. He's, you know, Richie Murphy is kind of saying it's not uncommon for him not really to train maybe the couple of days after a test match, but it probably does point towards, given he picked up a slight little knock there on Sunday afternoon, with a 6-day turnaround, chances are I'd say we're probably not going to be seeing him this weekend.
Yeah, bang on, Neil. I think that's exactly it. I think you can read between the lines there, and that we will have Jack Carty or Joey Carberry starting this weekend. It's a great opportunity for Joey Carberry to pick up some more minutes now. He is back fully training. He was back fully training at the end of last week. But it is that old thing that if you don't train for the full week fully with the team, you're not going to be involved with the squad. So we can take it that Johnny Sexton didn't train fully today. So that means he's not going to have the full week and he won't be available for this weekend, I would imagine. The other first choice person who's probably not going to feature this weekend, and I think we're nearing a definite on that one, is Robbie Henshaw. Did see him at the training ground today. He's standing on 2 feet anyway. There's no kind of extra strapping there or any setback or any anything that might suggest that he's nowhere near running standard, because he is running, and he will be back, I'd imagine, perhaps for the end of the pool stages, which is very positive news. But yeah, as you say, Johnny Sexton is the news today. They are still sticking with the line, though, that he was taken off for tactical reasons on Sunday. Obviously, there was some sort of knock, and maybe at the time Johnny Sexton thought he was fine. And you have to say that it probably was tactical, given they accrued a bonus point by the time he was taken off. But if you're of a negative disposition, then like your best player picking up an injury in the middle of a World Cup isn't exactly the most positive news you'd be hoping for at the start of this morning.
Yeah, I suppose given how long he actually stayed on the pitch, you probably might be able to kind of believe that it was tactical, maybe keeping him on for as long as possible until kind of there's no guarantee of the result. If they were really worried about him, I imagine he would have been whipped off on that kind of 25-minute mark when he went down for the second time. On the others, though, that were mentioned this afternoon, Peter O'Mahony and Bundiaki, they're both cleared, they're both back to training, yeah?
Yeah, indeed. They passed HIA 3 yesterday. So if you pass HIA 2 and HIA 3, even if you failed HIA 1, it does not mean you have to go through the return to play protocols. So they don't have to do that. So it was going to be a bit of a question mark whether or not they'd make it after return to play protocols, because that, of course, is a 6-day process. And we only have 6 days between games. That's out the window now, though. They're back and they're available to play this weekend. So that's certainly positive news. Whether or not O'Mahony will play now is a different question, because you look at Ireland's back row options and you certainly point to that as one area where Ireland can rotate. But then again, they were both first half substitutions. So maybe Joe Schmidt wants to get a few more minutes into the legs. I'd imagine we'll see possibly 2/3 of Ireland's first choice team this weekend. I think it'll be a mixture of resting up Johnny Sexton and perhaps resting up one or two other players as well. We'll have to see. But it'll be kind of a little bit of rotation, because that word was mentioned by Richie Murphy earlier this morning. But it's still early in the pool stages. It's still a game that Ireland will be looking to win. And then if they're in a positive enough situation, come away with the bonus point.
Yeah, the two players that were before the media today, Dave Kilcoyne and Chris Farrell, wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibilities to see either of them start. Chris obviously came on and did brilliantly the other day. And, you know, if Ireland have any doubts maybe over risking Bundee Aki, you imagine Chris Farrell is going to be in there. But the man I want to speak about, though, is Dave Kilcoyne, who came on the other day for Cian Healy. And Cian Healy even mentioned previous, I think it was yesterday, he spoke about how, you know, he's looking in his rearview mirror at Dave Kilcoyne coming over from at the moment, and he's performed so well. He's probably one of the few players in the squad that really did peak his season's performance right up to the summer, and looked like he came back in the shape and the form of his life as well. He's given Ireland a real option coming off that bench, and who knows, he might even be starting this this weekend.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Like, you're right, he is playing the rugby of his life. Cian Healy actually said that he's not sure how long he'll be able to hold him off for, because in that second game against Wales, he was absolutely unbelievable in the warm-up game. So he's a man who's on form at the moment. That is information that we do have, and it'll be great to see him start a World Cup game this weekend. It's just one of these more dynamic options we have in the front row. And yeah, he was speaking today about how great Cian Healy has been, because even if we did like a report card on all the Ireland players after, say, the England game, when we were at, say, our lowest ebb this year, the one player who you could say it was fairly blameless in that, who had a very good 2019, it's probably Cian Healy. I think Cian Healy had a very good year up to this point anyway. So it's all of a sudden as competitive as the other side of the front row, which we knew was very competitive after Andrew Porter's, not competitive because Furlong's so amazing, but very, very good in terms of depth after Andrew Porter's emergence last year. And then if you go and complete the scrum, I was asking, and we'll get this perhaps play the slip tomorrow or something like that, I was asking one of the props this morning up for Japanese media who the player they most admire in the Ireland squad was, and they said Rory Best. So all of the Ireland starting front row is getting international appreciation at this point.
Yeah, and speaking of that, not complete appreciation, because I think as well, Yusuke Kizu, their tight head prop, when you speak of the Japanese players in the Irish front row, and a man we just spoke about, Cian Healy, he was thrown in a couple of little hand grenades there about, you know, just giving something for the referee this weekend to watch out for, saying Cian Healy isn't really the most legal scrummager in the world. It's bullish talk, I think. From what I could see, there seems to be an air of confidence about that Japan team.
Yeah, there does. Like, Kizu was the man I asked, and he said it said Best as well. Like, he was previously asked about Tadhg Furlong, actually, and it's kind of one of those that you throw up a softball and you hit it out of the park. You say something like Tadhg Furlong is one of the best players in his position in the world, but he didn't say that. He said, oh, we're just focusing on ourselves. And then he obviously mentioned about Cian Healy and scrummaging and going in from the side a little bit. Of course, all these things are going through an interpreter, so the interpreter is actually picking up on that. And maybe when it gets into the technicalities of a scrum, you can't be fully confident that it is being interpreted in terms of its tone precisely.
I think
he probably did have a mischievous smile on him when he said it a little bit. But today was kind of a little bit softer. Yesterday, there was a bit more bullishness from them as well. I guess they were saying that, you know, they're here to win. They're here to give Ireland a bit of a rattle. Today, you had players up who weren't involved in 2015, but yet they still say that the spirit of being an underdog, but actually winning as an underdog, is still in this team. They want to prove a few people wrong this weekend, and it's a different situation to last Friday when they were really expected to win. I think that's fair to say. So if you want to put the mediocrity of their performance down to that pressure last Friday night, then perhaps if that's lifted, we'll see a kind of a smoother Japan outfit this Saturday.
And you say you're staying in the same hotel as the Japanese team. Are you kind of bumped into anyone in the lift, keeping an eye out for players or anything like that?
I bumped into Michael Leach in the coffee shop down the road here yesterday. Weren't exactly mobbed by supporters, and I said I'd leave him be. Hopefully he'll be up for actual press media this week. So I saw him. I think he ordered an iced latte, I want to say. Not sure. Don't quote me on that. That's big information to be giving without being 100% sure of the details.
What does that say about him as a man? What does that say about him? What can we read into that coffee order from?
Well, you can forget about him as a man, basically, I think is what that says about him. But yeah, no, you see a few of them knocking around the hotel here. It's a nice hotel. It goes right up into the sky. It's like the highest point in Hamamatsu. It's interesting because when I was looking around into this area, I'd kind of known that this part was particularly rural. And you do wonder if Japan have decided that this is the place to take their toughest game in the pool stages, to take a team who certainly wouldn't be used to this level of humidity down here, because it's gone up an extra notch since Tokyo. Granted, it's not as bad as it was yesterday, but getting off the train yesterday just hit you. It was like walking into a steam room, to be fair, when he stepped onto the platform here in Hamamatsu. So if we return to those temperatures, it's going to be a very suffocating atmosphere or conditions on Saturday. In terms of like any Irish fans, there's the last I've seen of them really is in that train station in Yokohama at the weekend. I haven't seen any of them since. I think they're probably most of them.
I think they're still in bed.
I think most of them would probably stay put in Tokyo or Yokohama Stadium. And when they eventually roll out of bed, they'll take the bullet train down here and probably do a day trip to Hamamatsu. Hamamatsu, I guess, if you're going throughout the south coast, is halfway between here and the likes of Osaka and Kyoto as well. So they'd be big tourist places. So if you're an Irish fan, you're coming nowhere near this place until match day, I'd suspect.
Owen, brilliant stuff. Thanks a million. And we'll check back in with you again in a couple of days' time.
Thanks, Neil.
That's Owen Sheehan there, our reporter live in Japan. I imagine he'll be back on OTBAM tomorrow morning as well, and we'll speak to him whenever we can here on the Rugby World Cup show. Now, coming up in a couple of minutes' time, we'll have Paul Williams on the line to us from Rugby World magazine. A few news headlines to bring up to date with, though, around the Rugby World Cup. There are some matches going on over the next couple of days. In terms of team news, England head coach Eddie Jones has rung the changes for Thursday's game against the USA. 10 changes in total from their opening win against Tonga. World Cup debuts for wingers Rory McConachie and Joe Thokonosinga, as well as centre Piers Francis as well. George Ford captains the side. Elliot Daly, Joe Marler, Tom Curry and Billy Vunipola are the five to keep their places from Sunday's win against Tonga. Rory McConachie starts on the right wing. The former Sevens player was uncapped when called into the Rugby World Cup squad recently as well last month. So their team in full, we might get it up on the screen in front of us. Joe Marler at loosehead prop, Luke Cowan-Dickey at hooker, Dan Cole, then Joe Launchbury and George Cruz in the second rows, Tom Curry, Lewis Ludlam and Billy Vunipola in the back row, with a back line of Elliot Daly at fullback, Rory McConachie and Joe Thokonosinga on the wings. Centres are going to be Jonathan Joseph and Piers Francis, with George Ford at the out half and Will Hines coming in at scrum half. He came off the bench against Tonga the other day. And a bench then of Jack Singleton, Ellis Genge, Kyle Sinclair, Courtney Laws, Mark Wilson, Ben Youngs, Owen Farrell and Anthony Watson. Their opponents, the USA, meanwhile, they have four Irish-born players in their match day 23. So look out for this game closely when you're watching it on Thursday morning. Among the former Pro 12 winner with Connacht, AJ McGinty. He starts at out half, one of their more experienced players. And John Quill as well, Cork native, they both start. Two of their more experienced players who played at the last World Cup as well in England. And then on the bench, Greystones hooker Dylan Fawcett and Inish Moorman prop Paul Mullen. He's also on the bench as well. So some really good Irish representation there for the USA. 14 of that match day 23 in line to make their debuts as well this weekend. And also Canada in action against Italy tomorrow morning. Worth looking out for Ulster out half. Peter Nelson is in the starting lineup for Canada tomorrow afternoon. No place though, unfortunately, for Ireland's Shane O'Leary, the Limerick man, who's also in that 31-man squad. A couple of other bits of news to bring you up to date with Wales second row. Corey Hill has been ruled out of the rest of the tournament. He's been released from their squad. He's failed to recover from a leg injury up before the tournament, while Ospreys' Bradley Davis has been called up instead. He'll join up with the squad in the next few days. And Scotland's World Cup hopes, meanwhile, have suffered a third major blow in as many days after scrum half Ali Price was ruled out for the remainder of the tournament as well. He suffered a foot and ankle injury in Sunday's defeat to Ireland. He's going to play no further part in the tournament, with Henry Purgos in line to join the squad. He's flying over in the next couple of days. You add that to the news that Hamish Watson suffered that really bad knee injury and he's also out for the remainder of the tournament. And the third blow as well, just the nature of that defeat against Ireland, which was really, really disappointing. Now, coming up in the next couple of minutes, we'll be with Paul Williams of Rugby World magazine. Before that, though, a couple of more sides still to make their first appearances at the 2019 Rugby World Cup in Japan over the next few days. One of those is Uruguay. The South American side take on Fiji and Kamashi and tomorrow, I think it is. Former Munster prop Mario Sagario isn't going to be playing in that, unfortunately. The country's second most capped prop retired just a few months before the Rugby World Cup due to work commitments. And I spoke to him recently enough on Land of the Rising Scrum about that and about the World Cup and how it can be the perfect opportunity for players in his situation from lower down nations to put themselves in the shop window as he did to get his move to Munster in 2015.
Yeah, that's true. You know, for us, it's a way to show how rugby goes in this part of the world. I understand that maybe in Europe, you know, the Six Nations countries and everything, they don't really know how the rugby goes in this part of the world. apart Argentina, that's a different story. That's the opportunity we have to show that, to show to the world that we are working, we understand the game, we want to play at that level, we want to be involved in that world.
And then the move to Munster specifically that I mentioned there, it was only a couple of weeks after, or a week or two after Uruguay had finished up with that World Cup. I think you were taking a little bit of time off and you get a phone call to say there's a team in Ireland interested in you.
Yeah, you know, I finished the World Cup and three friends of mine, they went to Europe to watch the last two games. And after it was supposed, I was going to be with them like 2 weeks traveling. We were going to be to Netherlands and France and have a few weeks off. And after I finished World Cup, I came back home in Paris. I took my stuff and I joined them in Netherlands. And at the second day I was there, I received a call from my agent saying me, you should be at Cork as soon as possible. I was like, what happened? Yeah, Munster is calling you. You should be there now. I was like, okay, I can't take a plane now, but tomorrow I'm taking the plane. So it was like 24 after the call, I was arriving at Cork and organizing, you know, the test I was going to have it at Munster. It was crazy.
Yeah, that was Mario Sagario there, former Munster player who has just recently retired from World Cup duty or from Test Rugby with Uruguay, their second most capped player of all time, and got his move to Munster on the back of some really good performances at the 2015 World Cup in England. He spoke to us on Land of the Rising Scrum, which was our countdown series leading up to the Rugby World Cup, which we started way back in May when we spoke to Scott Hastings about Scotland and Tom English as well, the journalist over in Scotland. So all of that is up online. You can watch all of those back in full at offtheball.com/podcast, or you can watch them as well on YouTube, youtube.com/offtheball, our YouTube channel there. Just to bring you up to date so far on what's happening in the Rugby World Cup this afternoon, Samoa now 10-6 in front against Russia. That's going on at the moment. Their second try of the game coming for Asatiti Amosa 5 minutes into the second half, so they're 10-6 in front. They had got off to a great start. Alapati Leua with a try on 16 minutes, but two penalties for Yuri Kushnarev briefly put Russia in front, which they carried that lead up towards half time when they led 6-5. They could be further ahead though. I mean, they spent a period of that game in that first half playing with a two-man advantage. That was after Samoa had two yellow cards. A lot of really reckless tackling from them in that first half. Ray Lilo and their hooker Moti Matu were both sin-binned for pretty dangerous shots. Either one of them on another day could easily have been red cards. So that is coming on, I suppose, a very interesting day, because in the last few hours, World Rugby actually put out a statement to say that, I suppose, voicing their displeasure with the way some of the games were refereed so far. I'll just get it here now for you. They said, following the usual review of matches, the match officials team recognised the performances over the opening weekend were not consistently of the standards set by World Rugby and themselves, the World Rugby statement read. They also continued, but World Rugby is confident of the highest standards of officiating moving forward. That is coming after the very controversial non-card given to Australia's Rhys Hodge in the opening game for Australia against Fiji on Saturday morning, when connected with a very dangerous shot on the head of the Fijian winger. And no punishment was given in the end. And I suppose he has now since been cited, and we're going to wait and see probably in the next day or so if he is going to be punished. And that is the lay of the land at the moment. Some very disappointing stuff from them, and World Rugby not too pleased. And it's going to be interesting to see what they have to say about the decisions in this game as well so far for Samoa, who lead 10-6, 45 minutes gone in that game. Their second try of the match coming 5 minutes in from Asatiti Amosa. Now, luckily, we do have Paul Williams on the line. Paul, thanks a million for joining us.
Good afternoon, guys.
So I suppose, Paul, we'll get started. Wales yesterday, decent enough win against Georgia. Overall thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what Warren Gatland will have been looking for. It was the bonus point win wrapped up very easily. There were no big injuries. I think that was the concern. Ken Owens looked a little bit dicey there for a minute, but that seems to have gone away. I think they'll have been very pleased, obviously not with the entire performance. I don't think you can really expect these teams to, you know, play for 80 minutes when it's so easily achieved in the first 20. So, yeah, I think they'll be happy.
Mm-hmm. And, I think probably the main positive was they didn't really look to be affected by the Rob Howley news of the last week, which I think a lot of people probably thought might, you know, it might just unsettle them ever so slightly. But getting that Jonathan Davies try inside 2 minutes was just the perfect way to get started and shakes off any possible nerves they have. On another day, they could have struggled to break them down. You get towards half time, there might only be a couple of points in it. And then you start thinking about those things over the last week and, you know, you just start to get a little bit unsettled and, you know, struggle with the pressure. But they did look like they weren't affected one bit by it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you would have expected the problems to come if they were going to come in the back line. That didn't happen. I mean, the back line, particularly in the first 40 minutes, I thought they looked reasonably well gelled. Like you say, some of the passing in midfield was fantastic. A lot of that was largely down to Georgia being, let's admit it, sort of inept defensively. They didn't seem to have ever seen an inside pass ever before. I think they'd be pleased. Like you say, no major problems in the back line. And the Rob Howley news seems to have been sort of, you know, reasonably well managed, and it hasn't impacted on the team.
And I think the bright spark for the first half was certainly their attack off the set piece. You mentioned how Georgia just really did not really know what an inside pass was. And from what I was seeing anyway, it was almost like we've spoken over the last few months about how certain teams are, you know, are they holding a few kind of moves back, a few plays behind that they don't want to show their hand too early. And over the last year, we would have seen off a lot of Welsh set pieces. First option is give the ball to Hadley Parks and make some decent ground early on and get set after that. And it almost looked like for all those set plays in the first half of that game, every Georgian defender was just fixated on what Hadley Parks was doing off those and forgetting about the fact that Jonathan Davies is outside him, or that you know, there are other players coming in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a really key indicator of how well they played in midfield yesterday is how few touches George North had, particularly in the first half. So they didn't even need to use him because they were making so many line breaks through the centre. Like you say, John Davis was breaking through the middle at will. Hadley Parks, I mean, he didn't make many big sort of clean breaks, but he was getting over the gain line all of the time. And that George North barely touched the ball in the first 40 was a sign that they didn't really need their wings yesterday. He wasn't not getting it because they were mishandling the ball. He wasn't getting it because they didn't need him.
Yeah, it was almost like they were just using him. They were using his presence rather than his actual ability on the ball or anything like that, because it was as if they had anticipated that the Georgian defenders would be fixated on his every move. And if they just get him to run towards space, he'll drag players with him and create options for other players.
Absolutely. And it's probably, you know, I don't know how much work George will, but they've obviously done a lot of work on the Welsh squad. However, you know, George North hasn't been playing that well over the last 12 months. So I think for them to have put a big focus on George North was probably worrying about him being on the outside was probably a little bit misplaced. It'd have been better, you know, keeping at least one, two men all the time on John Davis.
The disappointing thing over the last couple of days, though, Corey Hill's injury, he's gone home. Bradley Davies is coming in. Wales are a little bit light on second rows at the moment because they're still waiting for... who is it that's coming back from the appendicitis as well? So they were left really with Alan Wynne-Jones and Jake Ball the other day.
Yes, they were. I mean, they do have an option. Aaron Shingler can play second row. He's a lighter weight option, but he can fit in there. But like you've mentioned, Corey Hill has probably been... let's take Alan Wynne-Jones out of the equation. He plays very well all the time. Other than Alan Wynne-Jones, Corey Hill has been probably the most improved player in Wales over the last 24 months. And his rise through Test rugby has been fantastic. So they will miss him and they do need to replace him. Now, Bradley Davies is a slightly different player to Corey Hill, but he will offer a lot more bulk. He's more of a Jake Ball style ball carrier, if you will. And he'll also present, you know, a lot more weight behind some of the in the scrummage, particularly in the second half. I mean, Wales looked light in the scrum in the second half when the younger, more inexperienced props were coming on. I think they're going to need a little bit more weight behind there, particularly when they start playing some of the bigger Tier 1 nations.
Yeah, and that bigger Tier 1 nation is coming up this weekend in Australia. in terms of positives and negatives, what will Wales be looking to do on Saturday again or on Sunday against Australia? And are there things in yesterday's performance that might worry them a little bit going into that game? How are they stacked, essentially?
I think the scrum will be an issue because Australia actually have a reasonable set piece for once. It's not usually their strength, the scrum, but I think they do have that now. So the scrum will be an issue in the second half, particularly when the first try front row go off. I think the back row battle will be key, and Wales will be reasonably pleased with the way that could go because, you know, Pocock and Hooper, they present a problem that not many teams in the world do, playing two open sides. It's one thing that Wales can cope with, particularly with if they pick Navidi and Tipperick. And Aaron Wainwright as well is a very mobile six. I mean, he's sort of in between. He's like a 6.5, really. So I think that'll go in their favour. The scrum, I think, is the big issue. The line-out won't be so much of a problem. And I think they'll be really pleased with the way that their back three are combining, particularly Liam Williams, who's continued his fantastic form over the last three seasons. He's been one of the standout players for Wales. So I think Gatland will be pretty pleased, actually. The biggest problem with this Welsh squad is always going to be injuries. Can't afford an injury at 9, can't afford an injury at 10, and can't afford another injury at lock. So that's how it'll stack up. But I do think, you probably asked me for a prediction in a second, but I do think Wales have got what it takes to win that match.
Yeah, before I even ask for that, on the scrum thing, as you mentioned there, is that something where if the scrum kind of gets in a little bit of trouble against Australia at the weekend, Warren Gatland is going to have to start fielding some difficult questions because he made the decision to leave behind players like Samson Lee and Rob Evans, which were shock calls really to most people, in favour of guys who probably can get on the ball a little bit more and offer a little bit more around the pitch. And if the scrum starts suffering, and you know that's one of the reasons why they may lose on Sunday against Australia, that brings a lot of difficult questions and a lot of pressure with it as well.
Yes, it does. It was an unusual decision. Nobody expected Rob Evans not to go on the tour at all. I don't know anyone who mentioned his name in those conversations. We'll just have to see how it pans out against Australia. If it becomes an issue in the second half, which it was against Georgia, and it has been in some of the actual warm-up games in the build-up to the tournament. So, yeah, that will be one of the questions. If it goes wrong, that'll be top of the question sheet.
So what's your call?
I think Wales will win by 5 to 7 points, but it'll be very close. I think any of those sides in the top six are capable of beating each other this time.
Good stuff, Paul. And I suppose finally, I don't know, are you watching the Russia and Samoa game at the moment?
No, I'm not actually. I've got that all recorded. My Skybox is sweating as we speak in the house. It's got about...
Yeah, mine is ready to burst at home as well. But worth watching out for in the first half of this game. You might have spotted on Twitter people talking about the two Samoa yellow cards in that first half. I might let you know, Paul, if you want to cover your ears, I might give the latest score at the moment.
That's okay, go for it.
22-9 to Samoa. They've just got their fourth of the game. So Ed Fido, 2 tries in the last 4 minutes, and they have their bonus point wrapped up. But 2 yellow cards in that first half for Rayleigh Lowe, and the second one then for Moti Matuu for pretty dangerous shots towards the head. And when we've had that news this morning that World Rugby aren't particularly pleased with the way that the games have been refereed and some of the decisions that have been made, Romain Poit has just put an awful lot more pressure onto the match referees panel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's very unusual that World Rugby act that directly. I mean, particularly to announce something that mid-tournament is quite unusual. It's like you say, that puts pressure on referees immediately. But I think it was necessary because some of the decisions in the opening games, particularly in the Fiji game with Australia, that was an unusual decision. Based on everything that's gone prior to that in the previous 12 months, you'd have thought that was a yellow card minimum on field. So it did need to be said. I mean, the reality is none of these refs are trying to be inconsistent. I mean, they're not trying to jeopardize the World Cup. They're obviously struggling with the interpretation of some of these new tweaks and changes. And it will put pressure on. Like you say, we're now far more likely to see more yellow cards after today's decision. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. But the refs are more likely to overcompensate and overcorrect than under after that decision, after that release.
All right, Paul, thanks a million for joining us, and we might catch up with you again throughout the next few weeks.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You're very welcome, Paul. That was Paul Williams there from Rugby World magazine and also the Under the Sticks podcast joining us to chat a little bit about Wales, who opened their campaign yesterday comfortably enough with a win against Georgia. Bonus point victory to start their Pool D campaign. Their big game, though, coming up this Sunday against Australia, which is probably going to decide who finishes first and second in that pool. Wales, they will have a tricky game to come up against Fiji as well, Australia having beaten them in the opening weekend. Latest score from the Russia and Samoa game. Samoa have settled in now. They're probably coasting towards a victory. 22-9 they lead. 56 minutes gone on the clock there. Their bonus point wrapped up as well. Two tries after halftime for Ed Fido. Converted both by Tusi Pisi. So they lead 24-9 with 55 minutes gone. Russia had briefly closed the game back to 10-9 with Yuri Kushnarev's drop goal, which was his ninth point of the game. A few more games coming up over the next couple of days as well in the Rugby World Cup. Tomorrow you have Fiji against Uruguay. Uruguay's opening game of the tournament. That's at 6:15 Irish time. Fiji looking to get back on track after their defeat in the opening round against Australia on Saturday, although they produced some absolutely brilliant rugby in that game and could very easily have beaten Australia for the first time in more than 50 years there. Also as well tomorrow, Italy against Canada. That kicks off at 8:45, or that's Thursday I should say, sorry, at 8:45 Irish time. Peter Nelson, Ulster out half, starting at out half there for Canada against Italy tomorrow. And then on Thursday as well, 11:45, keep an eye out for our four Irishmen playing for the USA against England. That's at 11:45 on Thursday. So AJ McGinty and John Quill in the starting lineup there. And we'll also have Dylan Fawcett and Inishmoreman Paul Mullen, Newcastle Falcons prop, on the bench as well. That's all we have time for this afternoon on the Rugby World Cup show. We'll have more rugby, I imagine, coming up this evening on Off the Ball. Keep an eye on all of our social channels as well, at Off the Ball on Twitter, and listen to us. You can listen back to this and any of our rugby podcasts on offtheball.com or on the Go Loud app. Off the OTBAM will be back tomorrow as well. I imagine we'll be in touch with Owen Sheehan from Japan. And then Thursday afternoon, we'll be looking ahead to Ireland against Japan here on the Rugby World Cup show, back at 12 o'clock, live on offtheball.com. And I imagine then we're going to have some team news to bring you ahead of Ireland against Japan on Saturday. Until then, though, bye for now.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.